You are listening to Ruining It for Everyone with your hosts Maggie McPhee and Christopher Harrington. Episode 7,
It's a Trap Code!
Alright, welcome back to Ruining It for Everyone. We've got our first guests for this week, 2012. We've got Aaron Rabinowitz from Red Giant Software. You probably recognise him, or at least his voice, from the Red Giant Software tutorials. And we also have Seth Worley, also from Red Giant. He's also a visual media producer for Lifeway Training and Events, and director slash writer of Red Giant's Plot Device. Welcome aboard, guys.
Hi.
Hey. Wow, that was in... That was like perfect sync. That was not...
Hello, we are one.
Aaron, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I'm a Taurus. My favorite color is blue. Or is that not what you're looking for?
Actually, that's fine as well. I like black hat chickadees.
What he said. Just exactly what he said. In fact, do that the rest of the tutorial. Just repeat everything he says back to him.
I was an animator for... about 10 years. I worked a lot of places, the Viacom family mostly, so Nickelodeon, VH1, all that stuff. While I was working with a lot of people who were a lot more talented than me, I learned a lot of stuff. For me, it was a struggle to get started because there really were no video tutorials, and the tutorials that were out there were written mostly by like engineers. They were pretty dry stuff. So I started recording, you know, things that I learned and shared them. Creative Cow asked me if I wanted to do a podcast, you know, for a weekly podcast on animation. And I thought, you know, podcasting, that's like a total fad. That's going to be gone really quickly. But I did it anyway. And, you know, it turned out to be really, people really were into it. And since then, since late 2004, I've just been doing tutorials nonstop. And that's kind of how I got into doing this. And now I'm with Red Giant. I want to do this for Red Giant because I love their tools. I literally went knocking on their door to work with them. And they said, we don't want to hire you. Thanks, though. And then my wife helped me write a proposal so that I was able to show how I would sort of help build a training library over the years. And that's kind of how I got into this. That's how I got over to Red Giant and how I do what I do.
So Red Giant produces software for the visual effects industry. They produce plugins for After Effects, Final Cut Pro, and now Avid and such. How large is the company?
You know, it's not a big company, not by a long shot. When I first got there a couple of years, 3 years ago, there was only like 8 of us and 8 like full-time employees. It's grown a bit since then, but it's not in any way a big company. They just have a really big footprint in the industry. And, you know, while they're known for motion graphics and visual effects stuff, more and more they've been really pushing into the areas of color correction and film for independent filmmakers, less and less so for the, you know, for the visual effects crowd. So it's a kind of an interesting sort of offering that they have across the board between, you know, the motion graphics stuff and the visual effects stuff and, you know, the different stuff that filmmakers might use.
So, Seth, you're also with Red Giant.
Yes.
No, you're not. Don't say that, dude. Come on.
You do a lot of the tutorials and you also did Plot Device, so...
I should step in one thing and say that, sure. You know, Seth is a liar, so that will inform your understanding of everything.
It's
going to
make this incredibly interesting for everyone to figure out what is the truth, right, and what is not.
Well, I just wanted to say that while, you know, Seth is, you know, we're working with him. We don't like him, but we're working with him. You know, I want Seth just to be, I want it to be clear to people that Seth is, you know, an independent guy who's working on his own projects, and we just happen to have latched onto his creativity and are sucking it out of him for our own purposes.
Well, just that Red Giant is not responsible or for anything that I say tonight while during this podcast. No, actually, my relationship with Red Giant kind of started up almost a little over a year ago when, let me backtrack. I've been doing videos and producing videos for you know, since I was in the womb. And it was actually since about 93 I saw Jurassic Park. That was kind of like what started up. But we can get into that if you guys want to hear. But anyway, I'm sorry. This whole thing is going to be me just rambling until Aaron shuts me up. I actually, a couple years ago, I did a promo for this. ABC had this this contest for during the last season of Lost to do a... for fans to produce a promo for the series finale of Lost. And being just a total geek and huge Lost fan, I was kind of like, well, I do this for a living. Why not just try? And so I did this promo for this contest that this promo that featured the smoke monster from Lost. It took place the day after Lost aired. It was a smoke monster kind of like in various suburban environments looking depressed and lonely and without any purpose anymore. And it said... And it said, you know, on, I think the finale was going to air May 23rd. So it said, like, on May 24th, the only mystery left will be what to do. Oh, no, I'm sorry. On May 23rd, the only mystery left will be what to do on May 24th. Through the miracles of my complete ignorance, apparently, of how to use the internet, I didn't properly submit the promo the right way. So it never really was considered. And, you know, and if I won, I would have gotten to go to some party where no one involved with Lost would have been in L.A. And it would, you know, but gotten some cool free stuff. Way better than anything ABC would have was ever offering in this contest ended up happening, which was I met Aaron. He emailed me and was like, hey, I love this promo. And I'd used Trap Code Particular, which is a Red Giant product, to create the smoke monster. And, you know, what I wasn't telling anybody and what anybody who's ever opened up Trap Code Particular will tell you is that the smoke monster is a preset in Trap Code Particular. Like, this, it's like, you know, it's not called smoke monster, but it's like, oh, that's why they did a smoke monster, because it's easy. But I, Aaron had me do a tutorial, and he saw some backlog of material that I'd, a narrative material I had done, and was like, hey, I want to do a short to promote Magic Bullet. Would you be up for it? And I said, no. And he said, please. And I said, okay. And, you know, and that's kind of the rest.
Yeah, we had to send a limo and helicopters and money. And yeah, it was just a, yeah.
It was awesome from my end, all that stuff, but.
But your VFX people, so it was all fake. So
yeah, well, okay. So, you know, we saw this. I saw this this promo that Seth had done for Lost, and, you know, we also, he had explained in the information about it that he had not gotten any like, he didn't, no one saw it. So I was just like, all right, this thing is totally worthy of letting people know about it. And, you know, we tweeted it out, we put it on Facebook, and then, you know, people started to watch it, and it was, I was like
my mom finally watched it.
Right. Yeah. She just tweeted that, actually.
Just now,
you know, I saw this and I thought this is a great, and clearly just from the work that he had done, he had a good sense of humor. I checked out Adventure Now, which is the series that Seth had done for Lifeway. It was just so funny and the writing was so good. And then in the behind the scenes, I heard him say that, you know, he had done they had done it for an obscenely low amount of money. And I said, that's the guy I want to work with.
Because he's cheap.
Right. Well, you know, it's more, I mean, yeah, well, pretty much. But when we decided we were going to do this project for Red Giant, whatever it was going to be, we wanted to show that you could do something amazing on very little money. And, you know, finding somebody who already knew how to do that was great. But obviously the humor of it was something that we really wanted, something that people would want to share and would be funny. And that's why I went with Seth. I won't tell you about the other four guys that we were talking to. No, I'm kidding.
They're dead.
So my understanding is that you came to him with an idea, and he said, I have this other idea.
Right.
Kind of how it works is Aaron comes with a really good idea, and my pride gets in the way, and I say, no, it's terrible. And Aaron puts up with it until I come up with another idea, and we both like, and yeah, then we end up going with him, all right?
We go back and forth a lot, but the thing is that it's not so much the idea that I had was I wanted to tell a certain kind of story that definitely would highlight Looks. That it wasn't about Magic Bullet Looks, which is one of the products that Red Giant makes. You know, Red Giant Looks, the Looks thing is that it creates these different film looks, and so we wanted to...
Can I tell them your original idea you told me? Like,
yeah, no, so I was saying that, like, we wanted to sort of highlight three different stories with three different kinds of looks.
Well, but your original pitch, which I thought was brilliant, which is what made me say yes, was it was very, very simple, simplified, and I knew it would, you know, we both knew it would need to be more complex, but his original idea was, he was like, I want to do this short for Magic Bullet where it's, you know, we show, basically it's like, this is your footage without Magic Bullet, and it's like a guy goes out to his mailbox, and he's talking on his cell phone, he like checks the mail, and he goes back inside, and it's like, and this is your footage with Magic Bullet looks, or with Magic Bullet, and then it's the same footage, except right when he gets to the mailbox, like a dude pulls up and starts shooting at him, and like explosions happen, and like this giant, it's like clearly stuff that like color correction would never be able to, you know, to be able to provide. And I thought that's so ridiculous. I thought it was really, really funny. And then he was like, great, I'm glad you love it. I'm going to totally change it. And then, and we kind of, you know, started getting into something a little more complex and serious, something really cool, but something so cool that I was totally not qualified to write. And I have this problem with going back. I hate people who go back and say, no, can't do it. No. I mean, it's like, you know, like when they, like Spielberg and them were trying to find someone to build a shark for Jaws, everybody said no. Everybody said no. And the guy that got the job was the first guy who just said, yeah, I can try. It's like, there's a huge deal just to like say, yeah, I can try. And so I don't like going back and just saying, no, I can't do it without another idea. And so I stayed up all night trying to come up with an idea, and I kind of worked from what I had, knew I had. And I had this button that we had bought for Adventure Now that came the day after we shot, we hadn't used before, but we really wanted to use, and kind of started from there.
Well, I think there were a couple of other like really bad ideas in the middle of between the first idea and the one we went with, things that were like you just couldn't do in the space of a short amount of time. You know, originally we were planning on doing this thing that would only be like 2 minutes long or 3 minutes, and you know, yeah, we were trying to do too much. And then I think that we thought that Plot Device would only be like 4 minutes long, but by the time the script came in,
we were fools.
Right.
Well, if anyone's listening who hasn't watched Plot Device, which is the thing they eventually came up with, then they go watch it now. Stop. Come back, watch it now, but make sure you watch the behind the scenes as well, because as Aaron points out, you really made two films. You made the thing, the cool thing, Plot Device, and then you made the here's what it's all about.
Yep.
The behind the scenes was just as important as the first part. Was that always a plan?
Oh, yeah. I think so.
When we first started talking about doing the thing, and Seth is right, and he brought up the thing about the commercial, we realized pretty quickly that it would just be kind of stupid. That would just be the kind of thing where, you know, that's the commercial, really. So instead, I convinced Red Giant to finance a short film with the understanding that we would also film a behind the scenes and use that as the commercial. So the film itself would just be a great film. You know, Seth is a great writer, and I didn't want to sort of stymie that with boy, it's hot out here. I sure wish I had Magic Bullet looks to cool the footage.
Well, no, because originally the device, I was like, what if it's called Magic Bullet? And Arn was very intentional from the very beginning about, dude, make sure this thing exists without us. Make sure it's something that can stand on its own and can totally like show you off and not just Red Giant. So, I mean, to his credit, he was very intentional about that from the beginning, about making it just a standalone good short.
I was going to say, because it's absolutely, it's hilarious because it's completely over the top. It's really, it's a good advert. I mean, it's got pretty much everything that Red Giant makes going into the production of it, which brings me to the sort of the crux of this, which is fairly low cost software on commodity hardware. How has the idea of accessible tools, Mac Pros, laptops, cheap software, how has that changed independent filmmaking for you?
I can definitely tell you one thing. I just pulled down like my first laptop. I still have like my first really professional great laptop, and it weighs 15 pounds. It's changed in the fact that I no longer have backaches when I go out and have to work some, you know, things have gotten a lot easier. It's made it a lot easier for anybody to make something. And the only thing that's standing in their way now is just a bunch of excuses, really.
Ironically enough, I think what's funny is it's caused you less backaches and me more, in that I'm a tall guy and I pretty much shoot everything I direct, except for a few projects where I've had a director of photography. And I figured out a long time ago that it never looks good when I shoot from my shoulder. Even when I had shoulder rigged cameras, it never looked good because I was taller than everybody. I was towering over them and I had to be at eye line. And so I'm used to holding the camera down below me and I arch my back when I shoot. And you can see all these behind the scenes things where I am like leaned straight over the camera and my spine is just like, it's deteriorating day by day because of how I hold the camera. So basically, if technology could just go back the way it was, I could have other people doing this job for me and my back would be fine.
I certainly feel your pain. I'm 6'4" and
yeah.
All of my friends are much shorter than I am. And so I'm constantly slouching and trying to
always
get in their eye line. And I'm also a stills photographer. Yeah, everything is kind of slightly pointed downwards.
And you're kind of like, you know, these LCD screens, like on the 5D and 7D, you're like, can these things not just like turn upward a little bit just to help me out so I'm not having to like get all the way down at its level, look straight at it? Your question, like, I actually started when I learned to edit on a tape deck-to-deck linear editing system. And it was an old piece of crap deck, too, that, like, if the power went out and the power came back on, your play deck, not the record deck, but the play deck, would start recording. So your raw footage would start getting taped over if I had a power surge of any kind. Yeah, it was terrible. And then, like, the time code would go out randomly, and if you karate chopped it right by the jog wheel, it would go back normally. I miss that thing so much. It was wonderful, and it was wonderful because it clicked and it beeped and it like responded to everything you told it to do. And
except
it was
for doing what you wanted to do.
Except for editing, it wouldn't do that. But no, it was just, it was such an aesthetically pleasing like experience editing on that thing. But it was great because it taught me how to edit with a little more permanence in mind, a little more like, you know, I can't go back and just keep moving clips around. It's like, if I do that, I'm going to have to get really creative in that. But it also helped me problem solve in that way. And I think that's incredibly important. But what's been great is that I'm also a very shy guy. And I don't sound like it, but I'm basically afraid of like new people. And I'm also like, especially when there's going to be a crew of people that I don't know and I have to tell them what to do, I get really self-conscious. And so I've been able to prolong that, and for a very long period of time, because I've been able to do a lot of this myself. And what's been great about that is that if I ever do, you know, as I get more and more people collaborating with me, I think I'm better. I'm a better director because I have experience in whatever it is that, you know, that they're doing. Especially now with visual effects, I feel much more confident having, you know, done a significant amount of visual effects and my work with any narrative stuff I've done, and with Red Giant now, if I were to have a team, I never want to be the guy who doesn't know what the crap he's talking about, yeah. Especially as a leader.
You know, it's funny because I think about the first stuff that I was doing. I was 16 years old and I worked all summer, and at the end of the summer, I had like $1,000 and I bought myself this JVC GR303U camera, which I still have. I still have it, but it's really sad because on eBay, I think you can get it for like $30 now.
Yeah.
It's a VHS-C too, which is like, you know, that little tape that somebody thought would be brilliant if you took a little tape.
Oh, yeah,
put it into a big tape.
Put it into the big tape. Right. Oh, remember those.
So convenient, right? So I had that, and you know, we used to do things like all of our special effects were practical. We would blow off like $100 worth of fireworks for a thing. Sometimes we would remember to unscrew the lens cap, which is great. It's gotten a lot safer by getting behind a computer and maybe not as exciting, you know, by using Trapcode Particular or whatever to make explosions, but definitely safer, and you know, you can just do it from anywhere. So
you still have all your digits?
I've got them all of them. Even that extra one that I shouldn't have, which is
nice. Well, it's a backup, you know, in case one of them does, you know, get harmed or something. You've got the extra.
It's practical, yeah, makes sense.
Trapcode in particular, it's almost its own application, its own universe inside After Effects.
Well, you know, I have this idea about there's two different kinds of plugins out there. There's the ones that do things that After Effects can't do. And I think there are plenty of the ones that do that. And certainly the After Effects might be able to get something like it, but a lot of these plugins take it way beyond that. And then there's the ones that are like I just call them B-flot, which stands for the big freaking lot of time that you save by, you know, using those. And, you know, it's always funny because you talk with people who aren't necessarily working, but they're sort of playing around, and I'm sure they've legally downloaded their license of After Effects the way I did when I first started, and they're like, well, why should I spend money on this thing? I could take 2 weeks and do the same thing. I'm like, well, that's because 2 weeks isn't worth the same thing that it is to people who are actually working for a living. But
on a deadline, yeah.
Right, exactly. On a deadline, it's one of those things. But I think there's a little bit of both going on there. There's a couple of, you know, and each year that Adobe releases a new version of After Effects, you know, they get more technology to help them fill in a gap that maybe they see a plugin vendor is, you know, filling, and they think they can either do it, they can make the product have more value. But I still think there's plenty of plugins out there that are,
you know, I have a habit of being that guy, the 2 week guy who's like, I'm the guy who put off learning After Effects for the longest time. And I turned in an EPK electronic press kit video for one time that had this crazy light texture going on in the background. And someone was like, did you do that motion in After Effects? I was like, no, man, I shined a flashlight at the wall and I flew it around, and then I did blending mode in Final Cut. They were like, how long did it take? I'm like, well, you know, and you go on and you're like, good God, you could have done that in After Effects in like 15 minutes, you know. And my argument was always like, you know, but it's your problem solving. And what people never told me that I realized now is like, imagine instead of using the particle system built in After Effects for 2 weeks, imagine if you had Trapcode Particular for 2 weeks and what you could do there. It's like, you can still spend 2 weeks on the project, but get yourself some of these more powerful and time saver things or anything like that. And good God, like where you can go from there is, in, you know, insane.
And so did you cut your teeth on, you know, After Effects, Final Cut Pro, or did you guys start out on the larger systems? Did you start out Avid, or what was your
I've never
experience?
Touched an Avid in my life.
Actually a loaded question, because I'm feeling that you guys probably both came in at the point where, you know, the revolution was happening.
I actually cut my teeth on a Casablanca editing system after the tape to tape. It was like that Casablanca system, which was, I was the only guy in the class that was using it. And then Final Cut after that.
Yeah, for me, you know, it's funny because I think I'm a little longer in the tooth. The high-end systems that people were using were, you know, were sort of just going out of fashion, and After Effects on a regular PC or Mac was really starting to become the norm. But there were some of these systems still in use. I'm thinking like, I'm going to say like Paintbox, or you know,
yeah,
I think on Quantel, right?
Quantel, so
that was,
Paintbox, yeah.
I had sort of just minimal exposure to it before it went out. I remember that the Avid, you know, the system was like, there was an Avid system. You didn't just have a software. It was like there was machines and they were Avids, and you didn't get your chance to touch one unless you knew somebody who knew somebody and you can get in to use one, or you were in school. But outside of that, you know, I was self-taught. And the funny thing was that I ended up really doing a lot of things the hard way and learning the hard way that I could have done things much easier. Like when I wanted to first do my first animation, was I took video, and then I, for some reason, I didn't know that there was Premiere or After Effects. I just kind of used Photoshop to make that film strip format, and then I drew on every single frame, only to discover that I could have done it so much easier in a program like After Effects, which was a little depressing. And the next time I tried After Effects, the first time I tried After Effects, I did something with, like, I had 15 layers, and then I was adding effects. I wanted to just do one effect on all of the layers, but I ended up, like, doing them individually, and it took me, like, 24 hours of work to do what it would have probably taken me an hour if I realized that you could sort of pre-comp or use adjustment layers and things like that. So I was, you know, I learned the hard way about how to do things like that. For me, it really, the real experience wasn't like high-end system. It was going from low-end to, you know, higher-end.
It wasn't until far into After Effects' life that they actually started doing things like blend modes and all that. There was a lot of Photoshop that they plopped into After Effects after the acquisition, because I remember having to do all of that manually anyway, and it sucked. But it was possible. You know, it wasn't even possible, which was fantastic.
For me, the real experience of you know, working with After Effects and sort of the evolution of things, I was working at Nickelodeon Digital Animation Labs in New York, and they, you know, occasionally I'd be sort of sent out to different locations in the Viacom family. And over the time that I was there, Adobe would always send people out and sit down and talk with the editors and the animators to ask us, like, what we were doing, so they could see what we were doing and then figure out the need. And, you know, when I first started, there was nothing like parenting or any of that. And so projects like Little Bill or Blue's Clues that, you know, that I was sort of involved with only on the periphery. Like, I was just, you know, it wasn't like projects that I worked on, but like the guy in the machine behind me was working on it. And I would see, like, I couldn't even imagine doing the kind of work that they were doing. But like Adobe would come sit down, and then the next version of After Effects would have parenting, so that character animation became something that was a lot easier to do. And, you know, you could see that. And then when it was time for my turn to do that stuff, I didn't have to go through the same kind of stress that these people were going through to, you know, animate on a really tight schedule. And, you know, I still look back at Blue's Clues now because I have kids and I watch Blue's Clues, and I can't believe that there was no such thing as parenting or half of the tools that we have that we take for granted now.
It seems to me that Adobe is really listening to the community and get the tools that they're begging for, which is really lovely. Yeah.
Well, not to make this a love letter to Adobe, which it's kind of turning into, or After Effects in particular. But
man, I hate Adobe.
I know,
so
they're
much.
Awful.
Well, I was going to say, it was like, all the tools suck, but at least they exist.
Well, no, I just meant that I was going to add to this. It's like so much has gone into After Effects now. I mean, if you guys have seen the show Archer, which is animated, Radical Access is doing almost all of the animation within After Effects, because there are so many tools to allow them to, you know, do more and different things, that they've figured out a whole system that works for them. And I've seen bits pieces about how they do it, and it's very, very quick. So it's amazing. I mean, it takes, like you say, it's taken that time to fill in those little gaps and not even know where some of the gaps would lead.
I'm really digging the new CS5 and CS5.5 round tripping that they have between Premiere Pro and After Effects. It reminds me actually an awful lot of Final Cut Pro 7, being able to bop into Soundtrack Pro or what have you and back without any problem.
I hear it's really seamless. Like, I hear it works really, really well. People keep telling me about Premiere and to go to Premiere, which is probably going to be inevitable pretty soon.
Well, I've switched, but I mean, I still really have a soft spot for Final Cut, but I've almost completely switched to Premiere, so.
I think in the future, Final Cut Pro X will be capable, but will it be too little too late? I mean, it's a question.
To give them credit back, my understanding is they really are working with the plugin makers like you guys and make it a better experience in the end. I know they have a vision of where it's going.
They want it to be a successful product.
Yeah. I'm just in Seth's camp where, you know, I think that maybe it was rushed, but I don't want to hammer them too hard.
So actually, I did want to talk a little bit about the tutorials that you guys produce for Red Giant. Actually, as a matter of fact, Aaron, I know your voice from all of the tutorials that you've created. So why do you choose a particular topic to do a tutorial on? Is it user feedback, or is it something like, oh, I did this at work the other day and would make a good podcast?
A lot of it is just kind of as I'm working on something and I figure something out. That's, for me, often it's like that, or I'll kind of get like inspired by something I see online, and then I'm like, how? I wonder if I can totally rip that off and make it my own. It usually turns out nothing like I expected it to, but I learn a lot in the process, and I enjoy sharing that.
Yeah, for me, for my tutorials, it really started first off with like plot device. With we agreed we'd start off with several of my tutorials would be based on effects done in plot device, and so we picked some of our favorite ones that we know we wanted to do tutorials on. And once those kind of ran out, it became kind of a list, a conversation of, okay, what do you want to do? And so for a little while, it was kind of what Aaron told me to do or suggested, hey, this might be cool. And then there were a few in there where Aaron would be like, hey, you did this thing in Adventure Now. Do you want to do that? And then the second to last one I just turned in, which hasn't been released yet, I saw Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol over the holidays, and it just came really obsessed with that sandstorm sequence in Dubai. I just thought that was insanely cool. I wanted to at least try it on my own, and I thought, well, why don't I just make this, you know, the tutorial as well? And I'm going to be totally honest. The effect did not come out anywhere near the quality that I wish it had, but it was a constant process of figuring out, okay, is this how, you know, I think I had it good enough for the tutorial, and I learned some very cool techniques with it, but to be totally honest, I didn't quite achieve what I wanted to achieve there, but I still achieved something cool. And so that tutorial was one kind of rare one where Arn was like, yeah, you can do it if you want, sure, go ahead. And it was kind of my idea from the beginning, but a lot of them lately have just been kind of Aaron saying, pointing to stuff, work that I've done and saying, this is cool. Other people might want to know how to do this. So I go do that.
Yeah, usually I just mean, I want to know how to do this. And I'm really embarrassed to ask.
Go figure it out.
I'm supposed to know all this stuff. So no, I actually watch a lot of tutorials online. I think it's important to consistently and continuously be learning. Otherwise, you're just going to, you know, you lose track of the tools and things. So for me, I'm in After Effects every day. It doesn't matter. Every day I get in there and I try to do something interesting and new. Often it's just old and uninteresting, but it's good to stay on top of it and try new things.
I have a bad habit of watching the first 5 to 10 minutes of a tutorial and then abandoning it and going to work on stuff because I kind of will kind of get an idea for what they're doing, and then I'll get my own idea about what I could do with that, and I'll deprive myself of more good information by going off and chasing some wild idea.
Plus, I think the best ideas really come from watching really bad YouTube videos where a person is doing a quote-unquote After Effects test, you know. That, right. I love those. Those are
everything's
just,
a test.
Right. Everything's a test, and they're terrible. And it's like, you know, some kid who looks like he's kind of going to the bathroom, but then a fireball appears in his hands, that kind of thing. So that's really what I'm aiming for in tutorials now.
More fireballs in the hand while you're
going while looking like
you have no idea how much he recommends this to me and keeps trying to get me to do fireballs in the hand
while pooping.
Oh goodness!
You can tell I have kids, by the way. That's the. That's me being on my best behavior.
In your defense, Seth, you did choose like one of the hardest effects out of Mission Impossible to do. I think the fire in the hands might have been a little easier.
Man, I know. And that fire in the hand sequence of Ghost Protocol was I did. I realized that very quickly. And I had already kind of started it and committed to it when I realized. And you know, it's scale. The hardest thing I'm finding is scale. Like, I can impress the crap out of people with like, you know, small scale stuff or smaller scale effects, but when you get to like giant plumes of smoke and like even I did a tutorial on an effect I did in Adventure Now, which I think the effect I thought it looked great when I first did it, and then I pulled it back out to do a tutorial on it. I was like, what was I thinking? This is so embarrassingly bad. Was this fly swarm of flies thing, which it doesn't look that bad, but it doesn't look like a real swarm of flies from my opinion. It's scale. When you start trying to create these larger scale things that the computer is like, no, it'd look cooler if it were small, Seth. And it's that constant argument of like, no, come on, look bigger. And
I don't think that's your computer actually, but.
Dang it. Yeah.
Is that? I was going to say, do you think that is that a limitation of current hardware, or is
no,
that?
No. That's. I mean, that. I think that the larger scale effects require
hard work.
They require harder work and more time. And yes, there is other hardware and software out there that can, like you said, like, you know, they can save you the time on that significantly. Somebody in this conversation may know about this way better than I do, but ILM for that specific sequence use a software I think they developed called Plume that I know they used a lot on the last Airbender that works with smoke. I assume it's dealing with particles and such because it's smoke and fire and et cetera. And I'm working with Particular, you know, and Particular is an amazing tool. It still is going to take the larger scale effect is going to take much more time and much more hard work. And there's a certain point to where I get tired and I want to go to bed.
I'd actually like to talk a little bit more about Particular and Trapcode in general. It seems to me that a lot of the tutorials will eventually end up in some portion of Trapcode, either Trapcode itself or one of the modules within Trapcode.
Well, I mean, Forum just got a huge, huge, cool update, and that's, I think, a big reason why it's getting a lot of show on RG on Red Giant TV.
Yeah, because now you can take a 3D, you can take a 3D object and bring it into Forum and use the vertices of that 3D object area as the, you know, the point where a particle will appear. So you can do some pretty interesting stuff with that. I'm trying to understand that the question was about stuff will end up in Trapcode, meaning what? Like that features will be added? Is that what you're...
I was actually just referring to the sheer number of tutorials that are on Red Giant TV, and, or at least from my perspective, it seems that the vast majority is some sort of, there's the magic bullet looks or colorista or what have you, but inevitably there's a Trapcode component.
Oh yeah, I mean, with a tutorial. Trapcode is I mean, it's an immensely popular set of tools that, you know, there's no company that's doing any kind of animation visual effects using After Effects that doesn't have Trapcode. And in fact, like Stargate Digital, Stargate Studios is an incredible studio. They you know, they've kind of pushed away from using the higher end systems, and they do everything almost, they said something like 98% of their work is done in After Effects. And it's, I mean, their stuff is the highest end stuff you see on TV. And I know that they do stuff for film as well, but, like, you know, they're strictly After Effects pretty much. And
they're the Walking Dead guys, right?
Yeah, they are. They are the guys who do Walking Dead. And they did the first episode of Pan Am. I don't know what happened to that show. It just had so... No, I'm not even going to pretend it had promise.
Too many subplots, like, you're a spy now? What?
Are you serious? There were spies on Pan Am? Why was I not watching Pan Am?
Yeah. You and everybody else, apparently. No, but the effects work on Pan Am, you know, if you check out their reel, you cannot believe how much of that is not real. I mean,
was done on a green screen.
Yeah.
The problem is that it was obvious that it was done on a green screen.
No, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I agree
with that.
Until I sat down and watched the green screen reel, I had no idea how much of that was not. I mean, I think that a lot of times when people are outdoors and they're shot in bad light, and, you know, the light doesn't match the kind of the light of the set.
Was the green screen indoors or outdoors? Was the green stage itself inside or outside?
I mean, the whole airport was inside. Was like a green screen.
Was a green screen. Yeah,
the whole airport, and it's pretty amazing. Actually, you should check out that on Stargate, I think StargateStudios.com or Stargate.com. I'm not sure, but I'm always amazed. There are people who do some pretty amazing things with tools that are, you know, that are considered low end. And I think that in the end, it comes down to two things. There's the creativity side of it, right, where you just find new and interesting ways to use stuff that people didn't, you know, expect to use those tools. Which, by the way, the people who create the software very rarely can even imagine. It's always these creative people who get their hands on it to do things that are really amazing with it. But I think that also there's always this excuse for, like, oh, the technology doesn't allow me to tell my story the way I want to. And then there are people who tell their story and you kind of forgive some of the effects not being as perfect as they could be. And honestly, I've seen still frames from Spider-Man, the first Spider-Man movie, where his hand is twisted around three times because some animator wanted to go home for dinner and decided that no one's going to notice it, but you can see it. Yeah. So, like, even when they're using high-end tools, you know, things like that happen. But I think that the kind of excuse that the technology gets in the way of telling the story is a load of crap. And that when a person who wants to tell a good story does it, you know, maybe the effect's not going to be perfect, but you don't even care necessarily because, you know, it does a good enough job and it helps do the bigger job, which is telling that story.
Well, that's actually why comedy became very prevalent in everything I was doing and all the projects I was making, you know, even starting in middle school and high school, was that I figured out very quickly that I could get away with trying some of this more outlandish stuff, like this science fiction and action adventure stuff. And people at the time, when I was a kid, being my parents, my friends, parents, you got a slight glimmer of, like, hope. Like, there were small, like, very quick moments that they would suddenly... that they would actually be enjoying what you made on its own, and not just because, you know, their friend made it or because their son made it or whatever. And a lot of it was because the people would invest in what they're watching. When comedy bought people's attention so much quicker, bought their hearts so much quicker, because they would suddenly want to like what they were watching. They would want to believe what they were watching because it was entertaining them very quickly with comedy. And so that's kind of how I think you end up buying the hearts of audience very quickly. And I don't know why I went off on that, but that just reminded me.
Well, I was thinking, you know, jumping onto the question about Trapcode, you know, and talking about I see what people do with it, you know, and sometimes, you know, there was a period where people were just putting out music playing and particles being emitted, and it would be this really moody music and the particles would just be really interesting looking and beautiful. You know, that was in itself something very different. It was telling a story, whatever that, you know, the music, that kind of sadness or whatever it was they're trying to do. And it didn't really matter what you were looking at so much as it kind of all brought it together. So it's not about doing the effect. And whenever it becomes about just doing the effect, anything you're using isn't going to look good. It's going to, you know, you're going to be pulled out immediately. It's nice to have eye candy, but it doesn't pull your audience in. It just gets them to look.
Well, something about Trapcode, I guess for people who haven't used it, this is the sort of software that usually was built in-house at the larger studios. It takes a lot of math. I mean, it's all, you know, lots and lots of math. And that sounds great. Well, computers do math, but someone has to figure out, you know, inside to do the math.
All the algorithms, et cetera.
Right. Yeah. I remember seeing way back when was it Peter Norby?
Yep.
Started. I mean, I remember seeing some of the early Trapcode stuff, and for people who are not part of these big houses and don't have this money, I mean, it's very exciting to see, you know, particle systems coming into that you could put on your computer, and versus, you know, you had to farm that out to somebody. It's pretty amazing, and where it is now is so far beyond that.
Trapcode, the whole suite of products, has really helped people to do so much. You know, and the fact that, you know, it's the same one people have been using for years. I mean, yeah, there's been upgrades to the software. You know, Petter is a really interesting guy. He's actually speaking this week in New York at After Effects New York. So I'll be seeing him later in the week. He's got a very artistic side, even though he is a coder, and he's got like this, you know, he writes music, and, you know, he's always working on, he's also making stuff with Trapcode and just trying to do animation. He has like a website, which is trapcode.com, where you can check out his stuff and stuff that of users that inspire him. But, you know, that's, I think, the difference between his software and most other software companies that I see, is that, you know, he has a side that's artistic, and he understands what it means to be creative and not just to put a bunch of code in.
Cool.
No, there was a lot to absorb. I mean, I think this has been great. Aaron, where can we find you?
You can find me at I've got two places to go to find me, aside from my house. There's redgiant.com, and also my personal website, allbetsareoff.com, which is not a gambling site, though many times gambling companies have actually tried to buy it from me.
And Seth, what about you?
I'm doing tutorials regularly at redgiant.com, Redgiant TV, and then my website is sethworley.com. Yeah.
Thank you, gentlemen, for being on our very first guested Ruining It for Everyone.
That was another episode of Ruining It for Everyone with your hosts Maggie McPhee and Christopher Harrington. Music provided by Kevin MacLeod. You can find us at ruiningitforeveryone.tv or search for Ruining It for Everyone on iTunes. Be sure to subscribe and rate the show, as it really helps us out.
Careful, Seth, we're going to send you downstairs of Aaron's house so you can get murdered.
Yeah.
A lot of the listeners will have no idea what we're referencing.
Right, yeah, I don't know if that first house is going to get used. So,
there are people.
Murders under, people.
Right.
Although, episode 7, The Murder Room.
The Murder Room.
It's more of an apartment, less of a room. It's like a two-room basement, and so it's like two rooms, really.
The murder apartment.
Okay, Aaron's neighbors are watching football downstairs, so he claims. We think that people are being murdered, so that's...
Yeah. Now, Aaron started off the conversation by saying, if you hear screaming, it's just the people watching football downstairs. It's not me murdering them.
A likely story indeed.
Promise.
It's plausible deniability. It's plausible deniability. That's what we've got.
Can you guys hang on for about 3 to 4 minutes while I just step away to do something, and then I'll...
Certainly. I think it's very important. I have several friends, freelance
videographers. I know you're lying right there. Just
yeah,
right
never
now,
mind. We're done. Comedy is important. I have one friend, Arne Rabinowitz, who they...
Forever alone.
I don't even remember what I was going to say now.
Arne, are you taking a shower?
No, the heat is on in my apartment. I'm using that to cover up the murders later. It's a good. I thought by now we'd be done.
You're hosing off the apartment right now, is what you're doing.
We've all seen American Psycho. We know how this ends. Oh, I thought you were shorter. Oh, I thought you were taller. I thought you were blonde. You know, that type of thing. But you are dying, aren't you? Oh, dear God. Should I call Cambridge 911?
Please destroy all my porn.
It's like I called movie phone more than I called like my parents for the longest time.
Wow, you're suddenly like the newest person I've met and the saddest person I've met.
I mean, but there's still a movie. I mean, if you call it, I think it still works. But it's, like, oh, yeah. it's more like, hello, I'm lonely. Will you talk to me?
And it only sells tickets to like Titanic and like films that were out.
Right.
Like,
Die Hard is playing.
Yeah. Well, if I recall correctly, it's still owned by AOL.
Oh, well, that's why it's just sitting there doing nothing.
So, anyway. So what you're saying is you did not see the original Star Wars trilogy in the cinema when it came out?
I did.
No, oh, I did thank not. God.
Seth. I'm so young.
That's uncanny. Wow, I hadn't even. Wow.
Yeah. Wait, Seth, are you? How are you appear? Because I saw Maggie talking, but it sounded like you. I can see this is going to be a very mature show. I'm looking forward to it.
Set this up.
Now, I understand you two are hotshot producers from Hollywood. Your new film's called The Red Giant. Seth, I'm told your son starred in the original film, The Iron Giant, which Red Giant, for legal reasons, is not, you know, like not securing the rights is based on. So my question to you is, what's Danny Glover like?
That is.
I have to say, that was some of the best preamble to a good joke I've ever heard.
Yeah, it was pretty great. And anything that involves Danny Glover is going to have my vote.